You guys sure you're in the best shape to be doing this?
Yeah.
We're good.
Hello and welcome to episode 77 of Popcorn and Prosecco, a show that's all about talking about movies. I am Perry Nemiroff and here is my co-host, Christy Pachko.
Hey everybody. Angie can't be with us this week because she's in Maine living it up.
Well, lucky her. Out of all weeks to pick to go away, lucky her.
Oh, for real. And she's been posting like gigantic photos of lobsters, or maybe that was someone else I know in Maine. Doesn't matter. I'm jealous.
It makes sense. So this week, what we're going to do is we're going to do a big review of Fantastic Four, and then we're going to kind of mush it into our hot topic, which is basically going to be about Josh Trank's response to the negative criticism, and just a recap of how Fantastic Four came to be and what that production process was like. So first off, just our straight review. I will start by sharing the synopsis from IMDb, which is, four young outsiders teleport to an alternate and dangerous universe which alters their physical form in shocking ways. The four must learn to harness their new abilities and work together to save Earth from a former friend turned enemy. That right there, though, is kind of like the last 30 minutes of the movie.
Yeah, I was going to say, that's a description of the third act.
Yeah. So one of the biggest problems with this movie, which actually, all right, I need to rephrase that because I don't think this was a problem, and I do admire Josh Trank for trying to do this, is that the large majority of the first, I mean, I want to say the first 60 minutes at least of Fantastic Four is about super young Reed Richards and Ben Grimm building like a baby version of this teleportation device, and then Dr. Storm sees it at a science fair and he's like, oh, I'm going to whisk you away to the Baxter Institute to help us finish our version. And then it's about, you know, like typical Fantastic Four shit. They get their powers. And then this is where the movie could have been really interesting. So we get all of this time with them, you know, how they have to work so hard to create this thing. Because that's one thing I love. Because superhero movies, you know, it's like Tony Stark, snap of a finger. He's got an Iron Man suit. This one I liked that they had to work really hard to build that thing.
I thought that was so boring.
Oh, I liked that a lot.
Because, okay, it's a fucking superhero movie. Like, I get that it's an origin story, but there's so much time spent doing the thing of, like, I'm going to weld something. I'm going to work on this. I'm going to do this. And then, like, there's so much time spent on computers, which is the least interesting thing in movies. Like, I don't understand. And then, it's like, they finally get their fucking powers, and we don't get to see them actually, like, use them in full force until the final 10 minutes of the movie.
Okay, clarification. I liked the idea of seeing them work for it to such an extent and spending quieter time with them when we get to build their relationships. It wasn't executed well at
all. I don't think it built their relationships, though. Like,
well, no, as presented in the movie, it didn't do it. I just admire the fact that he tried to do that, but it didn't work at all. I mean, it's like them being like this and, like, cue the montage. All of a sudden, the thing is built, and It's not very fun.
It feels like a lot of scripts shoved together, because what I found strange is that, honestly, I think the first 40 minutes of the movie you don't need. That could have been condensed. Like, because like you said, it starts off with them in 2007 being kids. I didn't need any of that. I didn't need to know that Reed Richards' mission in life is to build a teleporter. Like, it could have started with him, like, coming into the situation from the first day and being like, this is my friend Ben. Maybe he got Ben a job there, too, so that we wouldn't have to have Ben just disappearing from the movie for huge stretches. And like, Johnny could have already worked there instead of needing a huge sequence that like introduces Johnny drag racing for no reason that pays off anywhere.
Yeah.
And then there's a whole section where they introduce Victor Von Doom, who like is obviously the bad guy because his name is Victor fucking Von Doom. And they spend all this time being like, which I actually for like a hot minute thought he was the brother from Orphan Black. And I was like, no, Perry would have told me if that happened. Because he looks like
him. You know, I could kind of see that a little
bit. But like, it's this whole conversation where he's like, I don't trust authority. And they're like, come work for the authority. He's like, I don't want to. I was like, I don't care about any of this. This is stuff you could have established in a line in any other scene, which they do. So you don't need this. And it's like the movie like tells you stuff instead of showing you, which is so infuriating to me. Like, for instance, they cast Miles Teller as Reed Richards, so maybe based on just general Miles Tellersness, including that really hilarious Esquire profile, you think Reed Richards is supposed to be a dick, and everybody in the movie tells you he's a dick, but the movie itself never actually communicates that. There's like one instance where he does something that's kind of jerky in like the science fair scene, but beyond that, he's like, no one in this movie has enough character to make decisions about them. Like, if you asked me to describe Sue Storm, I'd be like, well, she likes to follow the rules and she listens to Portishead. That is all I know about her.
Well, actually, what you brought up about Reed is one of the biggest problems with the second half of the movie, is that when he leaves Ben behind, that feels so incredibly unmotivated, and it doesn't make sense. So, like, when he left the facility, I was sitting there, and I was kind of like, well, is he leaving because he's scared and he's ditching them and he's running away? Or is it, like, is he going to go, like, hang out there and wait for a time to break them out?
Yeah.
Like, I just wasn't quite sure what he was achieving by doing totally that. It was a clear. Big decision.
Because, like, he's doing something, and, like, in theory, he's doing something so they can fix their situation. But then, like, 10 minutes later, one of them's like, you know, we can't fix this. And I'm like, well, I'm glad that we spent so much time, you know, pissing about how we maybe can fix it.
Yeah. And, like, I really just missed seeing, like, after they spend so much time introducing Victor and trying to make him a person instead of just the villain, which, again, did not really work very well, but they tried really, really freaking hard, then we lose him for such a big stretch of the movie, and when he comes back, it's like, nothing is there from what we knew before, and, I mean, we should definitely keep a spoiler section. We need to talk about spoilers at some point, because there's one major, major problem that I had with that character that kind of, like, it really upset me later on.
No, yeah, we'll get to that, because I know what you mean, and absolutely. I mean, and it's also strange, because, like, the Fantastic Four don't get a lot of character development, which is strange, because it's their movie, but then I feel like Dr. Storm, played by,
he was my favorite character in the whole movie.
He actually has a character, that's why, and it's so strange, because I'm like, he's the character I'm the most connected to, and he's a catalyst to the plot. He's not the hero, but it's like Sue and Johnny barely interact. Johnny and Reed barely interact. Sue and
I forgot who tweeted it, but someone did recently that they said, I don't think Ben and Sue share one line of dialogue in the entire movie, which might be true.
They do. Because she says something like, I missed you or something. And he's like, yeah, whatever. And then he goes and makes friends with Reed.
Oh,
it's
like
maybe a line of dialogue there. And then at the very end or something. And then if you count when she addresses all of them during sequences, then sure. But it's like, it's crazy. And it's like, everybody is poorly written in this. The script is embarrassingly, like, utilitarian. Like, there's one part I wrote down where someone was like, we open the door, we have to shut it. And I was like, that sucks for superhero banter. That's terrible.
It really does.
The best
does.
Line in the movie is a Ghostbusters ripoff, which is when someone's like, Victor! And he goes, there is no Victor, there is only Doom. Huh. And I, like, people in my audience laughed, and I was like, oh, there are people in this audience, because, like, it was just dead silence for most of the movie, because it's
I don't
so
really know
boring.
What happened to that detail, but he shouldn't have been named Victor Von Doom.
That's such
the
a mess.
The second they say it out loud, you're just like,
because it's supposed to be that later, like, Sue makes some comment about how he always says such dark shit, and she's like, all right, Dr. Doom, and I thought, you could have called him Dr. Doom no matter what his name is. Like,
I know,
if someone's
really.
Being really negative, you can just say that. That can just... But, like, that's the thing. The movie feels
it's
really...
It's like the male version of Debbie Downer.
Yeah.
From now on, whenever a guy is a Debbie Downer, I'm going to call him a Dr. Doom.
I'm just going to say Dr. Doom across the board, because I actually like that. That made me laugh at the idea of just being like, all right, Dr. Doom, like, you know. But what's weird is that there's all these details in the movie that made me feel like they didn't understand what was important. Like, Tim Blake Nelson plays a bad guy, and I guess you're supposed to know he's bad because he chews gum the entire movie.
And because he's, like, the government official. All government officials are bad in superhero movies.
And
right?
The little kid that they introduce, that Miles is supposed to be baby Miles Teller, they put the worst prosthetic scars on his face to mimic the ones that Miles Teller has, which I found so hilarious and distracting.
I can't believe I didn't notice that, but now I kind of want to go look at the trailers.
Watch the trailer because you'll see them.
That's
but
so
it's just
funny.
So confusing. You're like, why bother with this? Like, you could have one, just assumed that he got those scars in between then and now. And two, like, it just feels like I noticed stuff like that and I was like, so this. You paid attention to, but the fact that 90% of this movie takes place inside, like,
I'd be very curious to read the original version of this script, because as it plays as a whole, this feels like four different movies. The kid movie, the Build the Teleportation Device movie, the In the Army Bunker movie, and then the superhero fighting movie.
Yeah,
and they don't pair well at all.
And it's funny because, like, there are movies like, you know, like, I think, like, Ex Machina did a lot of things where it was twisting genres in an interesting way. Slow West did that where it takes different tones and jars them together and gives you something fun and new. But what's weird is Fantastic Four tries to take all these different elements and kind of, you know, throw a little Amblin whatever in there, but there's no playfulness, there's no joy, there's no fun in this movie. Like, even Michael B. Jordan, who is like a charm bomb and everything else, like, he barely gets to be interesting
in this. See, that's one thing that I, like, I really do want to see Josh Trank make another movie and another smaller movie that he gets to make his way. But one thing that I definitely think in this movie has to be 100% his fault is directing his actors. Because every single one of them, I mean, they don't smile the entire movie. They look miserable. The performances are completely wooden. And the reason I think it's Trank's fault is because it's all wooden in the same exact way. Yeah. It's like they're basically playing the same role in a lot of ways.
Yeah, it's like this is how 90% of the dialogue of that movie goes. Hey, Sue, where are you going later? Oh, I guess maybe I'll go with you. Like, everybody talks like that. It's like the whole movie feels like a read-through, like as if no one has any connections to each other, as if they've never met before, and as if they're just trying to kind of get through the dialogue. And it's
and
such
then
a
they
strange
try to
choice.
Throw in one-liners, and it's not possible for those one-liners to be funny in that context. I mean, there is no levity in this movie. What I can't think of a single moment where I, like, even just, like, grinned at something.
I remember Michael B. Jordan made me laugh out loud at some point, but I honestly don't remember what it was. And, oh, heads up for people who are like, but the trailer looks good. There's shit in the trailer that's not in the movie. Not in, like, a train wreck way where you're like, that's cool because they replace it with other funny stuff. Like, no, it's just not in the movie.
To jump into spoilers.
Yeah, let's do spoilers.
All right, so spoiler alert for Fantastic Four. If you haven't seen the movie, you probably won't want to listen to what we're going to say now because we're going to spoil the end of the movie. Okay. So back to what I was saying before about Doom. So you expect me to get to know this character and, you know, connect to him on a deeper level than any other old villain. Then you bring him back in full villain form, completely stripped of all that personality you gave him. And then on top of that, the beginning of the movie, they take all this time to set up Victor's important relationship with Dr. Storm. He's almost like a father figure to him. He's never done anything but right by Victor. Yet, at the end of the movie, Victor has, like, a full minute of screen time to stand there and think, is there any purpose to killing this man? No, the answer is no, but he kills him anyway. I mean, that to me right there just completely ruined the villain character because I just, there was no,
it doesn't make
sense.
There
was no reason for him to do that. And I didn't really know what he was fighting
and
for,
like,
anymore.
Even as a motivational tool to spur the Fantastic Four together, like, they were already trying to stop Victor because they felt responsible for what happened. So, like, it's not like they needed, it's not the Coulson, you know what I mean? I think that's what it's supposed to be. It's supposed to be like when Agent Coulson dies in Avengers and they're like, oh, we got to pull our shit together because this guy died because we were dicking around.
Oh,
like,
not the same. Because they didn't have
no,
that
it doesn't
same,
work.
They didn't have that relationship that Victor and Dr. Storm have here. And that was a relationship that I really bought into because, like we said before, Dr. Storm was my favorite character the entire movie, and I liked the stuff he did with Victor. I thought that was bringing out a little humanity in a really bland, nothing character.
In the final act, I feel like we see traces of what this movie was at some point because
what do you mean?
Like
when Doom is walking through the hallway exploding heads? Because that was my favorite part of the movie.
That makes zero sense to me, but we'll get back.
I don't care. All I want is just that 30 seconds. Just give me that 30 seconds of the movie on the Blu-ray, and I will buy the Blu-ray full price.
See, for me, it's like, he says to Reed, you've always been so smug and jealous of me, which is something the movie does not establish. And I thought if they had set that up, if they had set Reed and Doom up as parallels, where they were both really ambitious young scientists that didn't just want to change the world, but wanted everybody to know they were changing the world. And that is what drove them to do the accidents, and that's what drove them into these points where one of them gets, like, powers that are cool and one of them gets super scary powers. That would have been an interesting dynamic, but the film doesn't properly set that up. Just like you can see traces of things that are meant to be interesting but are never set up properly. So then the finale where, like, they're fighting in another fucking dimension just feels
so stakeless.
Oh, that
was, like, the worst fight,
too.
And it's, like, none of that made sense. Who said it to me? Was it you or someone else? Where we just saw Doom exploding people's heads with ease to kill them, and then it has to be this whole elaborate thing on Planet
Yeah, in the
Zero.
Final 10 minutes of the film, he somehow forgets that he can, like, literally just shoot mind bullets, apparently, and blow people's heads up. And it's like, there's a lot of stuff like that where the movie sets up a rule and then forgets they set it up. Like, they suggest that, like, the Invisible Woman can create a force field that she can float in, but she has to hold her breath. And
how
then later, that's completely
that
not how it works anymore.
But, like, how ridiculous did all that look? Like, every time
it looked
I
really
saw
dumb.
The three of them floating in that fucking bubble, I'm just like, I want to know if that's all digital or if they had to pose and be, like, in the bubble for, like,
it's so embarrassing.
Seconds.
What I'm excited for is, like,
at all.
When they're all out of contract and they can talk openly about the shit show this was.
Oh, I can't wait. I can't wait.
Because, good God, because there's a lot of blame going around. And, like, you know, I don't know. Should we get into that? Do you want to get into the blame and the backstory?
I think it's about time. So, like, this is going to be our hot topic. We're just basically going to talk about the reaction from the filmmakers, from the general press, and just, like, the tumultuous process it was to actually get this movie made. One thing I want to point out is that I did the junket for this, and in case you guys don't know how those work. So we do the interviews, and before we do the interviews, they give us press notes. And the press notes is, like, filled with the story of how the movie came to be, and it's got lots of quotes from the actors, it's got lots of details about the characters.
It's intended to help you prepare.
There were so many details in those press notes where it was, like, Josh Trank talking about what the kinds of relationships he was trying to establish between the characters. It sounded really interesting that are just not present in the movie. One of which you just brought up, which was the rivalry between Reed and Doom. He went into, like, he talked about that to like great length in the press notes, and you don't get that feeling at all.
And what's crazy, okay, so there was a lot of warning signs, red flags about how this movie was potentially going to be bad. First off, nobody liked the first ones, so rebooting a franchise people didn't take to that well to begin with was not a great start. Then there were complaints that they were going off the source material, like, way far away. Then there were rumors that there were, like, massive reshoots and that maybe the director, Josh Trank, wasn't even involved in those. Like, again, rumors. I'm not saying those are true. I'm saying that was, like, word, whatever. And then he memorably got bumped off of Star Wars, saying he walked away from it, but then there were other rumors being like, no, he was crazy and didn't know what the fuck he was doing on Fantastic Four. They wanted nothing to do with him because there was a producer in common. So, again, a lot of this is speculation, whatever. So then the reviews start coming out, and they're across the board negative. I mean, at the time we're recording this, this has a 9% on Rotten Tomatoes, which is bad. Like, Paul Blart got an 8%. So, like,
Shit, what was that Reese Witherspoon movie with Sofia Vergara? I think that might be the lowest of the year, and I think this is 1 point above it.
Yeesh. Yeah, so that's where we're at on this. And so Josh Trank was tired of hearing people shit on this movie and blaming him, presumably. So last night he took to Twitter and basically said it wasn't his fault.
But, he said, a year ago I had a fantastic version of this and it would have received great reviews. You'll probably never see it. That's reality, though. The thing is, okay, I think it's probably inappropriate for him to have tweeted it, but part of me believes him.
Well, the other thing of this is, one, it's absolutely inappropriate because, like, don't talk shit on your movie while it's out there because it doesn't help it and it burns your bridges at the studio, like, oh, flat out.
Well, I get the feeling that whatever bridges he had there are kind of burned.
They've been burned
for months already.
There's like a difference between, you know, you're never going to work with that studio again and scaring off other studios because you're going to talk shit on your own movie before opening weekend. Like, Trank just basically trashed his career. Like, he started with a really interesting movie that got him a big opportunity, got him two actually, and now it's like he's not going to get another big opportunity, and he's going to have to scrap by to finance his own stuff for a while because I don't think people are going to want to work with him. His reputation is toxic right now. And so, oh, the tweet's down, by the way. It lasted online for 9 minutes. Because as soon as that went up, everyone, like me and Perry, was going, and when's it going to be gone?
Am not going to read this whole thing. But if you can, look up Max Landis's response, like, to that tweet and just, like, the general criticism of Fantastic Four. Because
who wrote Chronicle, which was Dragon.
He puts it in a very, like, respectful, he states it properly, where it's kind of like he says what it really is, you know, within the industry and, like, the pressure that working with a studio can put on a director creatively and what Trank probably had to deal with. But at the same time, he kind of doesn't let Trank get away with it. There's just, like, this perfect balance between what you're obligated to do when you make this kind of movie and, like, the unnecessary pressure that it could come with.
And I think it's a tricky thing because it's like, you know, Joss Whedon, after Age of Ultron came out, did speak a bit about how it was hard working with Marvel and there were certain things they demanded that he didn't like and whatever. And in a way was definitely being like, look, I know you didn't like Age of Ultron. That's not really my fault. And I get that. But one, I feel like do that after people have actually had a chance to see the movie. And two, you know, take partial credit, at least. I just find it kind of gross that he's trying to be like, well, it's not my fault. And it's like, well, your name's on the movie, so it doesn't even matter that it's not your fault.
Because I feel like he's in a lose-lose situation. I almost feel like that tweet was like a last-ditch effort to salvage something. Because, like, I don't think he's getting hired by any studios anymore at this point. Hopefully, I really do want to see him make more movies. I hope there's some sort of smaller independent studio out there who does help him get another feature off the ground at some point. But I have a feeling, sadly, that we will not see much of Josh Trank in the near future.
I don't know that he's talented enough for anybody to put up with this bullshit. I mean, like,
because... I really hope that one day he leaks his version of the script. I'd be very curious to read that.
But even if the script was good, we don't know that that means the movie was going to be good. Yeah. He didn't write Chronicle, right? Chronicle was Max Landis.
Max Landis.
Yeah, so, like, we don't have proof that he's a good screenwriter. But even if it was a good screenplay, I just don't like... Because in that hypothetical game, anybody can win. It's like, you know, I could be like, oh, well, if I had directed this movie, it'd be 1,000 times better. And you can't prove me wrong, but it's a stupid hypothetical.
And it's also, like, the thing, like, you could have an amazing script, but, you know, movies change big time from script to set to screen. And, like, who knows what would happen. It seems like that happened a lot here, too. Because, I mean, like we said, with the reshoots and the additional photography and seeing things in the trailers that aren't in the final cut, and also just the way that they put title cards in this movie where it's like 7 years later, 1 year later. I guarantee you they shot that a good deal of that stuff in the middle.
Well, what's weird to me is that here's the thing. I don't give a shit as a critic what happened behind the scenes. I care about what's in front of me. Now, as a fan of movies and as like, you know, an entertainment journalist or whatever, I'm interested in the background on it. But like, I don't really give a shit what Trank went through. I care about what's on screen. Yeah. So, you know.
That's why I'm glad we're doing the hot topic today after the review.
Yeah, we didn't want to, yeah. And I mean, yeah, I don't know, man. Working with studios is tough. It's you know,
it's so surprising to me that this is happening because it just makes me think of The Maze Runner and Wes Ball, who was someone who made his first feature as a big studio film with Fox. And that just seemed to be like the most like wonderful, like fruitful relationship between a studio and a new filmmaker, where it seems to me like he got to make the movie he wanted to make and Fox also got the winner that they wanted to make. Yeah. I don't know. I was just kind of hoping that this would mirror that a little.
Okay. So
which clearly it does not.
I think we should wrap up soon, but I just want to say this. I think it's not as easy as black and white. I don't think Trank is entirely to blame. I don't think Fox is entirely to blame. I think film's a collaborative process. And some, you know, and sometimes it's just fucking hard to make that work. But listening to what the bits and pieces are and the rumors are about this reminds me a lot of when you hear about the way people talk about the Island of Dr. Moreau. And that documentary about the shit show that was making that movie is called Lost Souls, and it's on Netflix now. And I feel like watch that, because it's actually about like a young director who had this dream project and he worked really hard on the script and he had all these concepts, but he was not impressing people on set, and ultimately everything went to hell. And it's a very fascinating documentary, and I feel like, God willing, 10 to 15 years from now, we'll have a documentary about what this Fantastic Four movie was.
I'd be very curious to, like, even read a book behind the scenes.
Yeah.
Actually, that could get Trank back on the map if he just wrote a tell-all book.
He wouldn't make movies anymore, but he could probably...
He might not make movies, but, like, I guarantee you that book would sell a shit ton of copies.
If he could write, he could do what we do.
Backtracking
a little.
Who doesn't
want that dream?
I guess it's safe to assume that we are both not recommending anyone see Fantastic Four. Oh. Yeah. Yeah. Sadly,
it's just boring. I mean, like, you know, it's getting a lot of hate. I don't even hate it. My review is entirely negative, but I don't hate it. I was just bored.
Yeah. It's boring. There's just no fun to be had with it. So that's all we got for you for this week. It's a wrap on episode 77 of Popcorn Prosecco. You guys know the drill. You can go on iTunes where you can subscribe to the podcast, which would be fantastic. You can also rate and comment over there. We have our website, popcornprosecco.com. We are on Twitter, @PopcornProsecco. Please like us on Facebook. And then both of us are all over the internet as well. Christy?
You can find me @ChristyPutchko on Twitter, and I write all over the web, but you can find my career highlights at decadentcriminals.com.
And you can catch me on Twitter @PNemroff, and all my writing is over at Collider.com. So, thank you guys so much for joining us, and we'll see you next time.
I just want to fix my friends.
You can't fix this.